It can be the you know, like you're supposed to, like, some people get a gift for their spouse when they, like, push the baby out. Like, it's called like a pushing gift or something like
Pushing
that. You
gift.
ever heard of that? It's
I have not.
like this
That
crazy thing.
sounds
So why did you
wonderful.
buy our board game as
As a fish.
congratulations for pushing a baby out?
It's gonna be a pushing gift from me to her for us, including myself.
Good job. Here's a game.
Yeah, it's a game that we get to play together.
Welcome, everybody, to Two Asians, One Board.
Welcome. Hello.
We are back. My name is Darren. I'm one of your hosts.
My name is Rio.
And last episode we did was on gaming with kids.
Yes.
With the assumption that Rio would have a kid by now.
Yeah.
But he does not.
There were numbers of false alarms where we were expecting it to happen and it just didn't a couple of times.
It could literally be any time. Like, it could be in the middle of this podcast.
Yeah, I could. If I'm called by my wife from, like, my left side over here, then yes, I'll be out of here and gone.
If you hear, like, air raid sirens in the background, that's what that is.
That is what it is. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, so no baby yet. No Everybody's baby yet. Waiting.
Yeah.
So we will carry on the business of podcasting because that's what we do.
Yeah. And this is going to be our first time doing it virtually from two different locations, although we're still in the same city. We're just being a little bit cautious about the fact that I may be called in to go to the hospital with my wife at any point in time. So this is us trying this virtual setup as well.
Yeah, so we're just going to try it out tonight. You can let us know if you've noticed any particular sound quality difference. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it would be hard to tell.
Yeah, I hope so. I'll edit it afterwards and make sure that it sounds top notch, as always.
For sure. Yeah. And, once we will be doing it virtually like this for probably at least the next year, starting in the summer, because Rio is moving away temporarily to another city. But these days, that don't stop anybody from communicating or gaming, in fact. And so rest assured, listeners, we will be continuing uninterrupted.
That's right. Yeah, we'll keep on getting those episodes out there, getting to that 20 episode after having hitting the 10 episode mark. I wonder what that 20 feels like.
That's right. Today's episode 11.
11.
Which is cool. And so other than no baby, it's only been a week since our last podcast, and it's been pretty busy for me right now. We are ramping up to my daughter's dance competition season, which starts like next weekend, which basically means I have no free time from Thursdays to Sundays for the next 6 weeks. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Parenting.
Yes. Me and my wife refer to it as dance jail because we cannot go anywhere.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Your annual dance jail that happens.
That's right. That's right.
Around this season.
So funny thing. So I was watching this YouTube channel called Tabletop Turtle. I don't know if you've seen this channel, but it's a pretty good channel, and he does kind of your usual YouTube content. But he just did this video recently, his top 100 games of all time, you know, again, typical kind of YouTube fodder. But he did it kind of trying to match the background, as he said, each game with a theme. So he went to different places to talk about each game. So to film this video, he went to 100 different places.
What? That's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. How that must have taken like a year or over a year.
And it wasn't like, you know, like a Zoom background like picture. It was like actual places.
He was actually there. That's crazy.
So it's pretty impressive. And the whole video was about an hour. So we only spent like, you know, like half a minute, 45 minutes to talk about each game in each place.
Yeah.
It's That's pretty crazy.
Amazing. Yeah.
So I realized that this guy is from Ottawa.
What? Oh my
because
goodness. Yeah.
I recognized a number of the places where he was.
Okay.
And so I reached out to him. I'm like, yo, But he hasn't gone back to me yet.
Okay.
So he's here, some stalker.
That would be a very cool, like if we can connect with him in person here in Ottawa, that would be such a cool experience and hear about that journey from him directly. Yeah, that'd be really cool.
Yeah. What's funny is like, we don't really go out to the local board game meetups to play because we have our own kind of group. And when we've thought about it, we're like, well, why pay $5 to go play with strangers when we just play with ourselves at home? But when you go away, I'm probably going to try and hit a couple of these meetups and see if we can kind of meet people in the community.
Definitely.
So maybe I'll run into this guy.
I'm sure he would be there.
Yeah. I like his videos too. And I like, they're good videos. That's why I started watching them. So it's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
Okay. So the next segment is, of course,
the usual segment. That
bought and sold.
Ba-da-ba-ba-da. I think there is. Wait, can I do a sound here? Okay, I don't know. Don't crash it. Dance Pop Acoustic Daydreamer. Can you hear this? Can you hear sound?
Bought.
Okay.
Sold.
No. Okay.
I can hear it. I don't know if it went out on the recording though.
I think it would. I think this program works that way. But
people can let us know if they actually heard something.
Yeah. Bought and sold.
That was kind of like spacey kind of dream music.
That's what I was going for.
All right. Not too much action this week because it's only been a week. But despite it only being a week, there's been a decent amount of action.
Yeah.
So I, at least, am still waiting very excitedly for the House of Fado Kickstarter launch. Yes. But apparently that's 2 more weeks away. So
I thought it was 4. It's about a week or... Yeah, it's two weeks, eh? Yeah, okay.
And in the meantime, Eagle Griffin continuing to spam giveaways.
Give away every week.
Yeah.
Every week. It's amazing.
So they're like giving away a copy to the Gallerist now, which is like a $150 game. Mm-hmm. I signed up. I already have a copy, but
just in case. Just signed up. I mean, it's better for us to have a higher odd to win another one than not to.
You already won the Mercado.
Mercado, yeah.
I don't think I won anything yet so far, so we'll see. But I pre-ordered a game that I actually missed the Kickstarter on last year. It's a game called Fromage.
Okay, cheese.
Which, for those out there, is cheese in French.
Yeah.
And being from a bilingual country here. Mm-hmm. And so this, I just saw this on YouTube, you know, like a random recommended video. And I was like, oh, that looks interesting. And so it's a game where you have to place your workers to, like, make cheese over the course of a number of turns, but the board is like a cheese wheel basically, and so it turns every round, and then your worker ends up facing a different direction, and then when your worker returns to facing you, then you can take him back, and then he makes the cheese, and the cheese gets left on the board, and then there's various ways of scoring, and there's various different resources and stuff. Anyway, it looks kind of fun, not too heavy, and I kind of like that theme, although like I'm not like a cheese connoisseur.
Yeah.
And I like the look of this cheese board as it goes around. Mm. And if you remember, I sold this game, Solkin, which had this interesting worker placement mechanic where you place the worker, but you don't get the action until the wheel turns to where you want it. Mm-hmm. And so I like that interaction of worker placement and time delay.
Yeah.
And so this kind of... is tweaking the same notes for me, but less beige gamey.
Yeah. Simpler, but also like more artsy. And I was looking at some pictures here, and it looks very intricately designed and put together.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. So I pre-ordered that from our boys at 401. And then, so we'll see. I haven't backed anything else or bought anything else. So, such restraint this week.
Just a single week. I mean, it's the dance week again, right?
I don't know what's wrong with me. I did end up receiving, finally, Invention, the Evolution of Ideas, which is Vital Lacerda's newest released game.
Yeah.
And I've spent the last 2 days learning this game, as much as I can. We were supposed to play it today, but we could not.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited to play this game because I think it's going to be maybe near the top. It's going to take some effort because it's like on Mars, maybe more than on Mars, but I think it's going to be really good.
So you haven't played it like with your daughter yet either, eh?
No, we got dance jail, man.
Got dance jail? No, no, to tell a certain time.
She's either dancing or sleeping. That's it.
That's amazing. Oh, like, because I remember every time there's a new board game that comes to you, like the day after you're playing with your daughter.
It's like burning a hole in my table right now because I want to get it played. So yes. This weekend, hopefully, we'll this get weekend, it played. Hopefully.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. I also received a game, which I don't even remember buying. I definitely didn't back it because it's not a Kickstarter thing.
Okay.
I don't remember buying it or pre-ordering it. I remember looking at it. So it's a game called Redwood, which is actually a beautiful game about taking photographs in like the Redwood Forest.
Yeah.
And so I remember looking at it and thinking, oh, that's pretty interesting because it has some gimmick to it. Mm-hmm. But then I thought, it's a gimmick. So I didn't buy it. So I don't remember buying it, but obviously I must have.
You must have at some point convinced yourself it's okay. Gimmicks are okay. Let's just buy it.
So I got that, you know, random surprise box that ends up surprising you and it's pleasant, but I don't remember buying it.
You may have pre-ordered it, I think, if you pre-order something.
I must have, because it just came out, I think.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
But so it's this interesting game where you have these little plastic templates that determine how your photographer moves. And then you have these other like viewfinder plastic templates that you have to swing around and try and catch things in your field of view to take a photograph.
Okay.
And so it is quite gimmicky and it's giving me major Warhammer flashbacks where you use this plastic templates to figure out what you can shoot and stuff. So, but it was fun. It's not hard to play. We played it already. It's 3 players. It took like 45 minutes, an hour. It's pretty lighthearted. It's fun. It's actually the template thing, while it is a gimmick, it's fun because it's not so fun to try and do it yourself. Yeah. It's really hilarious when other people feel like they lined up the perfect shot and then the templates don't fit.
Oh, no.
Because you have to do it all by eye. You're not allowed to like pre-test it.
Oh, really? Okay.
So if you're not good at estimating these things, you're just going to suck at this game.
Oh, my goodness. That's very. It's almost like a skill-based game then.
Oh, it totally is. It's like a visual skill. Like you have to be able to estimate it because things have to be completely in your template, even if there's like a little, you know, horn sticking out, like it doesn't count, right? So it's kind of funny.
Okay. I mean, you don't have that type of game at the moment other than this then.
No. Right? Yeah. No. And generally, like I try and stay away from these kind of gimmicks. Yeah. But I don't remember buying it. So it'll stay in my collection for now.
Yeah, for now.
Speaking of selling, I did get rid of those couple of games we mentioned last time.
Yeah.
But I've not been able to get rid of Septima.
Which is
nobody
surprising.
Wants to buy, pay more for a deluxe.
It's surprising because I guess if you, I'm thinking about some of the board games where you have a deluxe and a non-deluxe version versus those board games that only come in deluxe. Like Vital Lacerda games only come in the deluxe price tag. So there's no choice between having it cheaper or more expensive. And I can see why, like Septima, I would imagine like the normal version to suffice as a board game and to give you the same experience.
I guess it's less common for you to look secondhand for the crazy deluxe version. Generally, if you're buying games secondhand, you're not looking to spend a ton of money.
Yeah,
and we're going to talk about.
So that's going to be our topic tonight.
So it's kind of topical, but and I don't want to sell it for like the same price as a used retail version because then I've lost a whole bunch of money. So I've not been able to move this game.
Yeah. It's
which
just...
might mean I just have to keep it. I'm not totally upset about that. But.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was, I can go now about the backed, bought and sold games. I backed absolutely nothing. Bought something, but I didn't quite buy anything either. But
you teased people on Instagram. It was in your cart and everything.
We were at the store. We were staring at it. We were looking at three different options. One was the Dune two-player war game. I forgot the name of it.
War for Arrakis?
War for Arrakis, yeah, that's the one. So it's basically like the War of the Rings, like Lord of the Rings type of like two-player combating area control and like fighting each other type of game. And I was... it was right after I had watched the second part two of Dune, and I was very much sold into the whole Dune theme and the idea and the world, and I wanted to be able to play that out myself, like me against my wife, but she was not super into that idea, so that was first of all vetoed, and second I was
still gonna play Dune Uprising as well.
I know. We should do that as well. But other than that, I also tried to convince my wife to buy Sleeping Gods. So there were two Sleeping Gods that were there sold at Hobbiesville, which is a local board game store here in Ottawa. So Sleeping Gods Distant Skies, which is the more recent release that they had, and then the original Sleeping Gods. So it's really cool of a... I guess a campaign game where you're exploring islands. Sleeping Gods, the original one, is by a boat with different crews, and you're essentially unwrapping a story and doing different quests that and fighting bosses and things that ultimately get you to the end of the campaign, but also it's a bit of an open world concept. And yeah, the new version of it basically is a kind of fixes some of the things that people didn't like about the original, which I haven't played either, so I can't really say too much about it, and I haven't gotten my hands on either yet either. Because,
but is it the same game just fixed, or is it a new game?
It's a new game. It's a completely new game.
Oh, okay.
It's now traveling by sky. Like you have like basically a slightly easier way of traveling apparently,
right,
because of that. But also the story is completely different. It's the one thing that really attracted me to this game was the fact that Ryan Lowcutt, who is the designer of the game, is also the artist of the game and also is the owner of the publishing company.
So it's his
baby,
his prime joy. Yeah,
his prime joy. He draws it, he tells the story, he wrote a book about it. Everything just really comes together. So if it sounds, it is something that my wife and I do plan on buying down the line after we have established a rhythm with the baby. But definitely a two-player adventure of a game, it seems like, that I would
we yeah would he also did all those, that series of games like Above and Below, Near and Far.
Yeah, he did.
They
yeah
seem very popular. They look beautiful. I'm just mm-hmm not into that kind of campaign style right now, but they yeah look amazing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, he is definitely like, he seems to be a very much artist in that realm and in that field. So that's something that I will soon to be buying. Like, it will be a bot game soon, not yet. Not at this
point. It can be the you know, like, you're supposed to, like, some people get a gift for their spouse when they like push the baby out, like it's called like a pushing gift or something. Pushing like that gift. You ever heard of that?
I have not.
It's like this crazy thing. So wonderful. Why did you buy our board game as congratulations for pushing a baby out?
Yeah. It's gonna be a pushing gift from me to her for us, including myself.
Good job. Here's a game.
Yeah, it's a game that we get to play together. While you breastfeed, I figure out this game, and I'll set it up for you.
Good job pushing this baby out over 12 hours. Now let's play a game.
Yeah, let's play a game. I've been ready. I've been waiting here. So, the one game that I did sell, but also still at the house, I did get the payment. I'm just waiting for the pickup to happen. Is Amalfi Renaissance. So mm-hmm that had to be sold.
It didn't last very long.
It lasted way too short, and it's a shame. My heart breaks for the fact that it's a Japanese designer, and the art and everything, components, everything is wonderful.
Do you feel like you betrayed your fellow countrymen?
He is one of the only like mid to heavy board game designers in Japan. Like, there are not that many of them. And I am very sad to say, but this is just not quite my cup of tea. There are too many random components about it. Well, I'll talk about it later once we're going through the games that we've recently played. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go into games we've recently played. Mm-hmm. Why don't you talk about Amalfi? We played it once before. We talked about it briefly on the cast before.
Yeah.
But your second experience to try and justify keeping it, that didn't go well.
I tried so hard. One of the things that we didn't like about it when we first played it. So Amalfi, it is a bit of a resource management, board placement, area control ish, like with card control. Like you do,
yes,
a little
like
bit
your
of
classic, Euro game with lots of different mechanics. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
With
so
a loose like Amalfi theme to it.
The looseness of the theme is something that I like. I thought about it a little bit further as I was playing it, and I was like, "This is it's truly not representative of Amalfi whatsoever." There is no, like, other than the cover art, there is nothing that speaks Amalfi to you when you're playing the game, unfortunately. The number one complaint that we had last time was the starting cards. So we wanted to figure out if, in case your starting cards are different, if it's completely randomized, would that make for a more fairer and funner game? And the answer to that question, after 2.5 hours of playing and coming to the point where Camilla made a run for it and just had a few cards that really just worked with the end games, she just kind of like took off, and I made my attempts to catch up, but they couldn't quite make it. But ultimately, what we realized was the cards are still just, it's a lot of randomness by the cards and randomness by the draw. Just if things work in your favor with the round game bonuses or end game bonuses, like, it works out. If not, then you won't. There is no way to figure your way out of the luck of draw that you get. Which is something, it was just one too many, as you said, Darren, like, it was one too many things that were luck-based in the game. Just resulted in not...
And you know, the thing they're trying to set apart is that you use, instead of having resources, you just use ships. Mm-hmm. And the thematically is that you're sailing your ship somewhere, so you push your ships up, and then you're bringing back the resources, so then you just bring your ships back down to pay for something. So then all you end up doing the whole game is pushing ships up, and then the next thing you do is bring them back down again, and then up, and then down, and then up, down, up, and then down, until you run out of ships, then you reset, then you go up and down in your ships again.
Yep.
So that just is kind of, and then it's like it's very multiplayer solitaire.
Yeah.
The only interaction is you took my card, or you took my island card.
Yeah.
Or
you basically take things from each other. And also you basically, when you win, you're not, it doesn't feel like you won. It feels like you were lucky to have gotten
at the right time, at the right place.
In the right place. Yeah, exactly. Which is just not, for the winner, it feels bad. For the loser, for the person that is being defeated, feels bad as well. So it's like a lose-lose situation almost.
Yeah. It's an okay game.
It's an okay game.
Like, you have a competitive spaces in your, basement, in your shelf. Mm-hmm. You got to make some tough choices.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. That's true. So Amalfi, beautiful game. I think it is for some people. It's just not for us.
Okay.
Yeah.
What else do you play?
I also played Oros. This is the first time I played with my wife ever since getting it from you. So, we were able to figure out the whole... Oros is an island game where you are demigods, each of different types, and you're crashing islands into each other and trying to build mountains, and then on the mountains you build your temples, and on the temples you send your gods to study, and whoever gets to the basically finds nirvana and gets to a certain skill level and everything, whoever is most enlightened wins. And it's such a fun game. It's there's so much randomness with like the different island smashing and like the volcanoes erupting. There's some, like, definitely there is strategy involved, but also there's, of course, with the the Ultima player. For a two player, you need to have a third Ultima player. So there is some luck of draw there where we don't really, neither of us know what's going to happen, where things are going to go. But we tied, but then my wife, Camilla, got higher on up the mountain, which is like the Enlightenment mountain. So she got a little bit higher. So she took the victory away, but it was a lot of fun. I don't think I have any other games that have this kind of mechanic that works together. We've played it before as well. I'm glad that I got it from you and we kept it because it's a fun game. We'll play. If you want to play it, I can bring it back again so that we can play it.
All right.
Yeah.
And what about this game you guys were playing that you guys kept failing at?
Sail. Yes. It's a really classic game. I think a lot of people, some people that know very classic games know about this game. It's a reimplementation of like one of the games Sail before. It's a trick-taking game where you are trying to sail a boat across the ocean try not to get swamped by octopus tentacles. So you're trying to not communicate, like you need to, it's like the Sky Team game where you're placing dice in silence, but it's instead trick-taking in silence with each other to get the boat to move a certain direction. And
so basically the gimmick is that you have to determine who needs to win the trick to do a particular thing to the boat. Is that
exactly? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it's kind of like The Crew. I don't know if you ever played The Crew, but it's like a multiplayer trick taking game, yeah. But you have a mission.
Yeah.
Which is just this person needs to win by this many tricks or something. Like you have to somehow do that without telling each other what you're going to do.
I think, yeah, it's very similar in concept, but because it's a boat right in the middle, so it's kind of nice to visually see the boat go from like the beginning, like go through the obstacles and make it to the end. So it is very satisfying when you do make it to the end. It's a very hard game at the same time.
Well, when we start playing virtual gaming, we'll play The Crew on Board Game Arena.
Yes.
Yeah. Me and my wife and our friends in Toronto must have spent many, 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 many hours playing The Crew on Board Game Arena.
Okay. So did you get to a point where you can read each other's minds?
It gets to this point where it's difficult to pass the mission, but you feel like you could do it if you just try one more time. So then you just keep going. Like it's not so hard that you're just like, forget it.
Yeah, that's true.
So you know, it's that striking the right balance where you're like, oh, so close, you know, one more trick or whatever.
Okay.
So me and my daughter did find some time to do some gaming. We started to play Zhangguo or Zhangguo, as we would say.
Yes.
I can't speak Mandarin that well. Which is the remake of the original one. And a theme as a Chinese person, you know, it's nice. I want to teach my daughter about, you know, the unification of China and that kind of thing. So something, a game I really wanted to pick up, I did get it. We managed to get it to the table, but halfway through the game, we realized that we had been playing it very wrong. The rule book is not great. Had to go to Board Game Geek like 3 or 4 times to ask questions about setup and rules and stuff. And so we ended up playing it kind of wrong in a few places, and then decided halfway through that we're just gonna stop, and we needed the table for something else. So we got to go back to it and play properly. And I also think it really works best at 3 players or 4, not 2, because there's a lot of interaction in terms of area control and stuff like that, which just it just has much less impact at two player.
Yeah, no, that's common, yeah. I think in that type of games.
So when you don't have many hours to play, thanks to Dance Jail, we have been playing a lot of Netrunner.
Yes.
And so funny story. So back before my daughter was born, when Netrunner was still fresh, 2012, 2013, I was playing with a local game group at a pub near where we live in Ottawa here. And we used to have a few people coming out playing Netrunner and some people out coming playing Game of Thrones card game at that time.
Yeah.
And then it kind of died away. And then I didn't stop playing because of you had to keep buying the sets and everything.
Yeah.
So I looked up if there was a game group still playing Netrunner in Ottawa, like last week. Mm-hmm. And then I found them, the same people. They're on Discord now. So I joined the Discord server. And the minute I joined, one of the guys said, "Hey, you're the guy I used to play with like 10 years ago at that pub. Is it you?" I was like, guilty, I guess. It's the same guys playing now the No Signals game version of Netrunner.
No way.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Crazy. Oh,
and my goodness. They still meet up, although they meet up in a different place now because that pub is like gone or something. Mm-hmm. And there's about the same number of people now as there used to be.
That's incredible. Old timers. Like I do find that people that are dedicated into a certain board game and a certain thing just never change, never stop. Like that's true dedication into a hobby.
So we've been playing more of this Null Signal Games version of Netrunner. Well, we'll just call it Netrunner now because there's no other version.
Yeah.
It's really hard to get the old cards now and way too expensive. You have to go to eBay. So, and it's good. They've done a great job. The games are readily available. It's a Canadian company, actually. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to buy one expansion set and then that's it. I'm capping it.
How did they go about copywriting it?
Well, I don't know the details, but there's not called Android Netrunner, which is like the full name of the original game. I think it's based on some kind of book series or something. Like it's IP based.
Okay, yeah.
So it's generic enough, and they've changed all the art. It's all original art and everything.
Okay, so it's like very like it. There's that gray area that they were able to find a fine line between.
Yeah, or Fantasy Flight like didn't keep the license or something. I don't know.
Okay, yeah, of course, yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
And then we played an epic game together. Of Darwin's Journey. You and your wife.
Yeah.
And that was interesting. Your wife really liked it, partly because she won by a lot.
She won by a lot, but also she is a biologist by not trade, but kind of by passion. She's a biologist by passion.
It's also the perfect kind of game for her, like keeping track of different things and
keeping track of
game.
Yeah.
right up her alley.
Right up here. It's what she loves. It's what she enjoys in board games. It's all.
So if you don't know Darwin's Journey, it's maybe one of the most popular games from last year. Mm-hmm. It's by the Simone Luciani and Nestore Mangoni, duo who's made a lot of games, including Audubon, which I had last year. And it's basically a classic Euro where you have these worker placement, but you have to build your workers, qualify them by collecting seals. And then you have all these various actions. You can explore the Galapagos Islands. You can sail your ship chasing after the beagle constantly. Mm-hmm. You find specimens of animals, and then you have to deliver them to the museum for money and for knowledge towards writing the theory of evolution, basically. So it's the theme is that you are like reading Darwin's journeys and reliving his discoveries of the Galapagos Islands. So it's pretty theme rich. It's a pretty nice looking game. The components are acceptable. It's pretty there's actually a lot of ways to win. Lots of options, although at its base, it's like a generic, complicated Euro game. I didn't like it after the first time we played. Again, just two players, and we couldn't really get the seals to line up.
Yeah.
And I think me and my daughter scored really low on that game, like under 100.
Right, which is usually unheard of on that game, I think, usually.
Well, I think the board goes up to like 300. Yeah. So like, okay, we didn't do that good. But this time flowed much better. And I'll keep it for now, for sure.
Definitely. It's a lot of fun of a game. Like I think it gave me a lot of White Castle vibes. Because in total, you only have so many turns, like four actions, four workers, but then
five rounds.
Yeah. So like you're trying to make the most out of those 20 actions or like 20 plus actions that you get to take by additional, like being able to score some combos, I guess. So apparently when you get a lot of combos, it feels really good.
I didn't get that many combos. My wife got a lot of combos.
Well, when you do a turn that you only do one thing, and that feels really bad.
It feels terrible. Yeah. It just crushes you while someone else is doing like three things in a single action.
Yeah.
Tough luck on me. But
okay. Well, that's all the gaming we got in this week.
Yes.
So this week's topic is selling games.
Selling games.
Now, this maybe seems like a negative topic because we're all here about getting games and playing games. But at the end of the day, it's the circle of life. In order to get new games for most of us mortals who don't have unlimited space, you also have to sell games.
Let go.
And you can't just, you know, pile games up on your living room floor into a pile until it hits the ceiling, right?
Yeah, so that's right.
I think this is a very pertinent topic and we do a lot of it. And so we will come back and talk all about it after the break.
Yeah.
All right, we are back.
We're back. Hello.
So tonight's topic is selling games.
Mm-hmm.
Why sell games? Like, why would you sell these beautiful things?
Beautiful creations, art.
Board game, local board game economies, where to sell games, where to buy used games. We're going to talk about that aspect of the hobby, getting rid of games. And it, as I said before the break, it's an important part of the circle of board game life.
You have
to be able to let go in order to get new experiences.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's collection is perfectly curated so that they would be happy for the rest of their life with the same games.
I think if you follow any YouTubers or anyone that does board gaming as their, I guess, work to some extent, they have an annual list of these are the games that I have right now on my shelf. And also at the end of the year, they tend to go through a cleanup of the games. And these are the games that I'm getting rid of. These are the new things on the collection. Like, it's a very common practice, I guess,
for
people to clean up their shelves and fill it with new things.
So if you have analysis paralysis about what games you want to get rid of, or maybe you lean towards the hoarding tendency side, we will maybe give you some pointers about what to think about to decide what games to sell.
Yes.
So that's thing we're going to talk about now. Why sell a game? Why sell a game? Well, I'll start with the first one.
Yeah,
it's just not fun.
It's not fun.
You play a game, you don't have fun for whatever reason. You have to think hard about keeping that game.
That's true.
It's hard to play a game that you spent money on and maybe spent a whole bunch of time with, and you didn't have a good time to then go back and say, "I'll play that again." That's hard these days.
It is, especially when you have options of games that you find to be fun and you know you will have fun.
I mean, you just go to the store and there's like, you know, 400 games.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to put yourself through misery in this hobby, right? Yes.
Nope.
So I think that's like, if you play a game, regardless of what you think or all the other reasons we're going to talk about, if you just didn't have fun, it's probably not for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good reason.
And you might find that happens more when you first start in the hobby because you don't know necessarily like the kinds of games that you really enjoy the most. So you're just going to experiment with a bunch of different things. And who knows? Sometimes you surprise yourself. Sometimes you know you weren't going to like something and unfortunately you didn't. But yeah.
Yeah. That's a good reason.
Okay. So I think if you're not a heavy gamer, especially games that are too long, you're probably going to end up not playing. And if you don't, that leads into the next reason is if you don't ever play something, you should probably just sell it.
No, that's true. I think that happened to me with one of the games, Orleans, which I got, and we just didn't play it for months and months in a row. We ended up selling it without having actually, I've set it up a couple of times, attempting to play it, and it just never got played. The rule book was really much like all over the place. I couldn't quite figure out everything. And also it was, the theme was not quite right either. So, but I guess that's the next thing that we can get into as well.
Well, the other thing is like, sure, if you have like 100 games, mm-hmm. which is not hard to get to, I tell you.
Yeah.
you're not going to be able, and unless you have nothing else to do, you're not going to be able to play every game like every week, right? No. So it's fine for a game to sit on the shelf for a bit. Mm-hmm. But if you look at a game and you can't see yourself playing that mm-hmm. at any time soon, that's probably a game to sell.
Yeah, yeah.
And it may be because it's too long. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons why we sell games. It's too long, the game is too heavy, it's too long.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you mentioned theme.
Yes, I did. Theme is something very important to myself and my wife when we buy games. But also, yeah, when the reason to sell games. I think one of the earlier times when I was getting a lot of secondhand games, and sometimes you would get deals to buy, by buying more, you would get discounts. So I would be like, oh, I will just buy a couple more. Just
or to get free shipping.
Exactly. Or free shipping from the store. You would just add another game, just see what happens. And one of the themes that we came to realize, or my wife came to realize she is not a fan of at all, is like the very colonial castle-y theme. We have a Castle of Burgundies, but that's about the extent of the castle, like soldiery, like the Roman Empire type of theme that we will be playing in our collection, because it's just not a theme that resonates with her.
Yeah, I think theme is a big reason why you would buy a game, but mm-hmm. also if you don't like a theme, you're probably going to, it's a good reason to sell a game because you can't see yourself playing it or enjoying it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
exactly.
Sure. So in contrast to the selling the game that you never get to play, I think sometimes you end up selling a game because you're done with it. You've mm-hmm. played it too many times. It's solved.
Yeah.
Maybe even a bit boring. Mm. You know, moving on to something else. It's outstays welcome. You've played it till death.
Yeah. Played it. You figured out the puzzle and you found the solution
to the puzzle. And I don't mean it's like a campaign game and you finished the campaign, mm-hmm. but that is another reason to sell a game, because you've literally finished it and you can't play it again.
All the escape roomy games. And there was one game that I recently saw that I was thinking about buying for a second, but then I decided not to. Was it's called The Problem or something. It's a Neil Patrick Harris game. So actor,
like Doogie Howser game.
He like Neil Patrick Harris, the actor. He actually is the designer of this mystery puzzle solving / like escape roomy game, and it's meant for one player. I read a lot of reviews about it. He released it during the pandemic. So it was basically like he created an escape room game for people to play at their homes and being able to kind of involve their house stuff to be part of it, apparently. But again, that's one of those games that you would play once and then you would not be able to play ever again because you completed the game.
Yeah. 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 I mean, that's why I don't generally buy these one-time play games. Mm-hmm. Because although, granted, sometimes I sell games before I've played them more than a few times.
Yeah.
It just feels wrong to me to buy a game I'm definitely only going to play one time.
Yeah, that is true. But I do think it's almost like going to an escape room, but then through a game. So like it's like, and then if you can sell it for like a little bit less than a price, then it is like a really good experience that you get to have.
Cheaper than going to an escape room, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's like $30 a head now to go to like an escape room. You spend like half an hour in there, you can't figure it out, and then you get booted. I was like, well, that was like literally a waste of money.
You got to ask for hints. You got to not be shy to ask for hints during an escape
room. Yeah. Okay, so another reason to sell a game, which almost happened to me, is too much, like too mechanical, and that means like setup specifically, I guess. But even during the game, if you spend a lot of downtime just moving things and resetting up things. And so I have a good example of both. So too much setup, like Voidfall is a great example of a game people might sell because they don't want to spend an hour setting it up.
Setting it up. Just putting the components down, to be able to play the game.
And you know, that was almost me, except after we did play the game, it was so good that I'm like, okay, I can put up with it and I'll try and get it even faster, like a setup cheat sheet. And but that is definitely a reason to sell a game if you can't even be bothered to break it out of the box because it's just too much.
Yeah.
And then the other example of the other side is a game called Seventh Continent. Seventh Continent is a kind of a exploration camp story driven game where you have to explore the land through placing these square tiles basically. And on each tile is like a bunch of puzzles or encounters and you go through and you solve them all and you try and complete the story, which is all cool if you like that kind of game. The problem is every time you change scene, you have to wipe that all up, put it all back into place because it's all numbered, get all the new ones out, set it up. Then you have to leave that, you know, town and then go back out into the world. Then you have to set up the whole thing again and re-explore it all. And it's you spend half an hour in between these scene transitions just messing with these
clearing everything
square cards. And like, it was such a pain that you didn't want to go to the next place because you're just like, I don't want to do that again.
Yeah.
And then you had to just stop. So too much admin. That would be like a good example of too much admin.
Too much admin work within a board game.
Okay. So the next one is interesting. Components. Poor components. You think that's a reasonable reason, sorry to use the same word twice, to sell a game if the components are just kind of meh?
I think it... It could, yeah, it, I think so. I mean, it comes, it's similar to theme or like to like whether or not it brings joy to you playing the game. Sometimes components really take away from the joy of playing a game because it just doesn't feel good in your hands when you, because board gaming playing is so, so physical. You do like interact with the pieces. You're like literally, like playing cards, like looking at the pictures and whatnot. It's really interactive. Like there is interaction there. So components being, if the components are just not good quality and you're just not, you don't feel good about using those things, then I think one example of like the component that you always take out and put in is the clay tokens from Brass Birmingham that you, like the clays that you have for money tokens.
Iron clays.
Yeah, you bring that in to every single game that has any money component in it, because it that component is like, the iron clays are so well designed and nice, such a nice feeling to have during any board game. So if money is like all like too tiny or too, it's like things that you interact with a lot, I think should be something that you have a fun time dealing with and using.
I think the components also tied in the theme, as you say. If they're nice, it just makes it more fun. If they're crappy, it may not necessarily mean you sell the game, but it impacts your enjoyment. Like if it's a card game and the cards are really shitty quality, that ruins it, right?
Ruins the game. No, it does.
Like if it's full of dice, but you can't see the pips on the dice and, you know, like, if it's... Like Mariposa that we played recently at March Break. Like, it's very nice, but you have to stack all the components and so it just didn't work. And the component and the board together didn't work. And that ruined the game, really. So I think component design and choice of components is very important. I'm going to add to the list of components that can kind of ruin a game experience, especially when you haven't even gotten on board yet, is the rule book. I mean, we could do a whole podcast about rule books, but... If the rule book is not good, or if it's crazy too big, or you're constantly like, it logically doesn't make sense, you're flipping back and front and front and back, or there's no player aids, or that can be a real downer when you're just trying to learn a game. And
that's true.
You have to keep looking things up. It's not easy to find. And
Rule books part of, it's kind of part of the component portion. Like I think you need to be able to learn a game to be able to play it, and if you can't even learn it well, like if you're defeated by the learning curve, like if I mean even if it's not that complicating, sometimes it's just the way it's taught that it doesn't work.
So the next one is interesting. So it's game weight. Now this ties in a little bit with length, but I think obviously if you're looking for a lighter game and something's too heavy, you're probably not going to like that game. If you're looking for a heavy experience and it's too light, you might still keep it, actually. Yeah. It's like it doesn't work as much as if you're light and it's too heavy, you know? Because even heavy gamers need the odd light experience. But if it's just not the right weight of game for you, you might sell it because you might not see yourself playing it. And ties into that is also if a game needs too many players, you might sell it. So for example, a great example of this is Hegemony is a fantastic game, but it really, you get the full experience at four players. That's how the game was designed, and it just works the best that way. And so you could argue that you would sell it if you can never get that four players together. Or the same thing with Root, which you sold recently. That requires at least three or four players. And on top of that, people who know all the factions, you need to really get the full experience, right?
It's experienced players of all different factions. Like it's a hard niche group of people that you need to find that are willing to put in the work to learn and to be good.
You can't keep onboarding new people every game session, right?
Not at all.
Wouldn't work, right? So you end up selling it. Now, I recently got the Crisis and Control expansion for Hegemony, which gives us bots for the other like two or three people, two people, or one other person. So we're gonna, we haven't tried that yet. We're gonna see if that means we can play it at less than four. But that will be a much rarer game experience, even if you keep the game, if you need that many players.
That's true,
Okay, you put a good one down here. A variable game experiences.
Yes, the two variable of game experience. Wait, what did I mean by this?
Sometimes you play a game and it's awesome. Sometimes, like, it's not consistent.
So
sometimes you play and it sucks.
So this actually, to some extent, Amalfi felt that way. So my first gameplay of Amalfi Renaissance, because I won and because the cards played in my first two games of Amalfi felt that way. Both times, the cards were exactly in my favor. Everyone else was having a terrible time while I was having a phenomenal time because everything just worked for me. But then when I experienced the other side of things not working out for me, I had a terrible experience. So I think it's like the game, like, again, heavily luck based. It just didn't quite like it either. It's kind of like gambling. You're either making a lot of money, like you're like a millionaire that night, or you are debt broke with all your money stripped from you. But also, I think there are some games. I can't really think of many games at the moment off the top of my head.
I just think if you have a game where every time you, assuming you're all at the same level, so you know, beginners obviously might struggle at first. But especially the heavier games, because you're going to invest so much time. You want to always feel like everybody has the same experience. And somebody's going to win, somebody's going to lose. That's just that's the nature of the game. And I would say most gamers win and lose, and that's fine. Nobody wins all the time or loses all the time. But if you just feel like sometimes it's just like not even useful playing, and then the next time you're just crushing it, like it has to be consistent.
There needs to be some consistency
and balance. So that just goes back to fun, right? Like, it doesn't end up being fun because you don't know what kind of experience you're going to spend the next, you know, 2-3 hours getting.
That's important.
Okay, I'm going to come to an easy one. No more space. Not everybody has the piles of boards on the floor. And so if you're out of storage space, you got to make space if you want more games. And so then you have to come to this list of reasons and make tough decisions. Sit down in front of your shelf and look at it long and hard. Write an Excel spreadsheet. I don't know. Whatever you got to do. But if you're out of space, that's the reality. You got to make space.
Yeah. No, that's true. I think kind of tagging along with that is no more time. Very soon I will, with the baby coming, I will experience the scarcity of time, of like quiet time, board gaming time. I think I will have way less frequency of hard board gaming experiences and a lot more of the 15 to 20 minute board gaming experiences, just because of the fact that we just don't have that time. I've come to realize in Japan, so I'm being from Japan, and like in Japan, Japanese designers are like, there are a lot of really good Japanese designers that do phenomenal trick taking and short and easy, like very quick, like math based or like different, the tiger and dragon. Is it Tiger and Dragon? Yeah. Or like those really simple, straightforward 20 minute games. They're phenomenal at that. Doesn't take space, doesn't take that much time. Japanese culture and people don't have much time and don't have much space. So it makes kind of perfect sense why there are so many Japanese games that are exactly in that realm of board gaming, where they have so many of those little box games, because it just, there is just a limited amount of space available.
So going with the fact that you might be out of space, you have to sell games, is your boxes are too big.
Too big.
So that's a big reason why I sold Dice Thrones, because it was a gigantic box.
Yeah.
It's a big reason why I sold the Wingspan Nesting Box.
Yes, yeah.
That just taking up tons of space. Like, it literally couldn't go anywhere. It's a big reason I got rid of Gloomhaven. Not only have we kind of finished it, but it's just a massive box. That's why I want to get rid of one of the reasons I want to get rid of the Septima Deluxe, because again, it's a huge box. Yep. The Foundations of Rome, again, huge box. But I love that game, and so it's like that's under funny. A shelf somewhere. But that doesn't fit in a Kallax, right? Like,
yeah, no.
You know,
or it basically holds its own space. It's like, it's the only thing that can be.
It's
there.
The one thing, exactly. Even like Lacerda games, right? They're on the borderline of being too big, right? Mm-hmm. They have to have their own section, and luckily, all the boxes have the same shot size and shape.
Yeah,
but yeah, so too big. The game is too big. You got to sell it.
Yeah, sometimes they got to go if they're too big.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go to the next section, which is kind of what ends up developing in your local area is a little economy, a little self-serving board game buy and sell economy.
Yes.
And you should find it.
Yes, definitely.
So where can you find these little economies? Because they're very useful little groups to get games and sell games.
Yeah.
Keep that circle going, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are many places.
Yeah, so, you know, here anyway, so some places to look for these kind of game groups. So Facebook or equivalent social media, Discord, you know, Twitter, whatever you have. But like for us here, Facebook Marketplace is, and the board game group is the place to very easily sell games, like really easily. Sometimes within minutes, you'll sell a game.
Yeah. Within minutes, there are people just constantly scrolling. As I am right now, I see Sleeping Gods, the Sleeping Gods Kickstarter edition for only $90 with a cool boat on it. It's a sign. I need to buy this.
It's a sign from heaven.
Yeah, exactly. This is the
delivery
gift for my wife.
Pushing gift. Sleeping Gods. Oh boy.
Yeah, but
don't get in trouble.
Facebook Marketplace or Ottawa Board Game Market or any insert city board
wherever game. Wherever your local places,
be able to find something. Yeah.
Find your local meetup, because those people are probably also willing to just, even if there's no like website, they'll you go to a meetup, they'll probably just swap games, cash or whatever.
Yeah.
If you can go to conventions or events, there's usually, you know, used markets or whatever at those events. It's a good place sometimes to get some really good deals. Just stock up and also sell a bunch of stuff. When I used to run Warhammer tournaments, we had a gamer garage sale, we used to call it. And so everybody would just bring their junk and sell. And I used to sell thousands of dollars of useless stuff at this Gamer Garage sale. And, yeah. And people, so these are good places to go.
Yeah.
BGG, Board Game Geek Marketplace. Mm-hmm. So I don't have any experience selling on Marketplace.
Yeah.
But you can definitely buy off Board Game Geek Marketplace pretty safely and reliably, especially if you use like PayPal and stuff.
Yeah.
And you can get stuff there that you can't get anywhere, maybe other than like on eBay. So deluxe editions, collector's editions, Kickstarters, out of print stuff. So I recently actually bought a copy of Glory to Rome, which is like an old card game. Which I've been looking at maybe printing, like people like publish their versions of cards you can print, but I don't want to do that. So so I managed to find a black box edition of Glory to Rome on Board Game Geek Marketplace.
Wow. Okay.
So that is a place to buy stuff like that, especially the harder stuff to find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because the people, the most hardcore people are there. And
are there.
Yeah. They can. Yeah.
They're like jacked in all day. Cyberpunk style. Board Game Geek.
Board Game Geek. Yeah.
Some of your local stores will trade in used games. I know there's a store in Mississauga near where my in-laws live that has a section for people to sell used games. Obviously, like you sell it to the store, they don't give you a good price for it, they will sell it on. But I mean, it's a way of getting the games. So some stores do that.
It's like getting your car traded in, or like dealerships.
Exactly.
If you want to keep it simple, if you don't want to deal with sellers, because it's sometimes it's not always the easiest thing to deal with people buying your games.
We're going to come to price in a second. But the other place, of course, to sell and buy games is eBay. eBay tends to be pricier, not only because it tends to be games like out of print or hard to find, but also shipping.
Shipping becomes very pricey really quickly.
But it is a place, especially if you're looking for like old Netrunner cards, for example, or out of print Glory to Rome games, stuff like that. You can get that stuff on eBay, but it will cost you extra in shipping. Okay, what do you think is a fair price to ask for a board game that you've played maybe just a few times, and assuming you haven't wrecked any components or anything, like good condition? What do you think? What percentage of the retail do you think is a reasonable asking price?
That's a great
loaded question.
I just recently sold my game for.
How much did you sell Amalfi for?
Amalfi for about 76%, 77%.
Okay.
Of basically
three quarters.
Yeah. It's where I would start off at usually. I would start off by looking at the landscape of where everyone else is selling, like what the usual selling price for a certain used game is, and then go from there usually. Because there is, of course, the whole demand and supply aspect of board games. Some board games will be harder to get your hands on, and therefore people will be willing to pay more for it. Others are going to be very easy to get your hands on, therefore people will be more reluctant to pay anything extra on it. Root being one of the easy examples. There are so many, like you can buy Root anywhere and everywhere. I didn't necessarily ask for that high of a price for it. Amalfi, I think I think it's 3/4. I think it's a fair price for something that I've only played like 2-3 times.
Basically new. You just don't get the joy of unwrapping it.
Exactly. But. And some people I am of the party that loves unwrapping things, but
some people hate it though.
Some people hate it. Yeah, exactly. The popping out of everything, like prepping everything. It's not for everyone, so I completely understand. For some people, you kind of paid someone else to essentially do that and also get a discount. For others, that experience itself is like worth money.
So I think that's like 3/4 is fair, especially if it's a recent game. Mm-hmm. And it, if it's a hot game, you know, at the very, let's say you wanted to sell it for retail.
Yeah.
You're still saving tax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's still a, you know, 13, 14% discount.
Yeah.
Plus or minus if you were going to ship it from somewhere. But I think if it's a recent game and a popular game, you know, 75, 80% is more than reasonable if it's like barely used, basically. Mm-hmm. The older the game gets, I feel like your asking price goes down.
Needs to. It's like a used car that has seen some things.
And you know, that's interesting because as games get older, they also get harder to find.
Yeah,
that's true. But despite that, it seems like the price still goes down. You know, mm-hmm. So if you use like Board Game Oracle as a mm-hmm. in Canada anyway, as yep. like your retail set point, mm-hmm. because they basically tell you what all the stores are selling it for, all the websites are selling it for,
yeah,
then you kind of calculate from there. That's what I kind of do.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like despite older games being harder to find, they do go for cheaper.
Mm-hmm. I think
than the new hotness,
and I think it's because of the fact that board games are. The components are mainly cardboard, and cardboard components
wear and tear.
They just don't last as long as so. Yeah, it's there is always going to be and also older board games come like they are not as shiny, or like the art was just not as developed as they are today. And I'm sure 10 years from now, when we look back at the Brass Birmingham today, we'll be like, ah, brass. Like outdated art, I'm sure that will happen. I do think that like there is as an example, my copy of Vinios by Vitaly Cerda is the original version of the Vinios instead of the deluxe version with the updated art by Ian O'Toole. I got it for very cheap. So the gameplay itself is the same, but it's just the art is very different. You can get a much cooler art right now, but you will pay like 3 times the amount for it.
I feel like we didn't mention it, but one reason if you're thinking about whether you want to sell a game or not is how easy would it be for you to get it back?
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. you know, and that's so it's much harder to do that for older games, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or how widely available. So like, you know, Ark Nova, you can actually get a Chapters now.
Yeah, which is crazy.
You can get a copy of Wingspan in like a convenience store.
Yeah.
So like, don't feel bad about selling a copy of Wingspan, but you might not get that much for it because it's very easy to get. Mm-hmm. So you got to take all these things into account, I think, when you're trying to price what you're trying to sell.
Yeah.
Where you live is going to determine how easy it is for you to get games.
Mm-hmm.
So if you live in, you know, America somewhere in a big city, like it'll be easy.
It'll be easy. Yeah, you'll be able to find it anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's finish off by going online.
Mm-hmm.
We put out an Instagram post, and thank you everybody who follows us on Instagram.
Thank you.
And actually comments on things like this. We've built like a little community, and it's really cool to interact with the community. So thank you for doing that. And so we asked people, what are some regrets, so games that you sold that you regret selling.
Yeah,
and we have some input. So you actually responded to your own question.
Yes, I did, just so that I could get some interaction.
So you regret selling Root.
I have moments because I genuinely enjoyed the game when I did play it, but it just never. And also, I regret the fact that I didn't properly actually play all the factions. I only played like 2 of the factions out of the 4. So I still don't know. Like, so your daughter played the Vegapunk, one of the factions that I've never played, and I still don't know what that will be like because I have just never gotten the opportunity to do so. So it just maybe I sold it prematurely is what I'm thinking, but my wife tells me that it was the right sell. So I'm going with that.
Okay. I don't think I have any games that I regret selling so far.
Okay.
So I'm happy to say that I have no regrets. Mm. And I think maybe that's partly because I would have no compunction. If I really wanted it again, I would just go buy it.
You would just go get it again. Yeah.
Life is too short to have regrets like that. Mm. somebody said that they did sell Wingspan and they regretted it.
Yeah.
Now it's one of their favorite games, so it sounds like they ended up buying it again.
Yeah, it did sound like that. And it sounded like they got it earlier on as well.
Somebody else here said that they regretted selling. They haven't regretted selling any games because they're always being games they never played. Pile of shame.
Just a lot of pile of shame. And one comment that I got from this username by the name of Sergio is the fact that he never regretted it because thanks to the tabletop board games,
Tabletop Simulator
board games. Yeah. So basically what he apparently does is before selling a board game, he makes sure he basically checks whether or not the Tabletop Simulator has a version of that game.
So he can still play it.
He can still play it. Yeah, if he still wants to play it, that itch can still be itched. But also he like usually plays the game beforehand so that he actually knows that he will like the game as well. So it's kind of like a double way of going about it. And I did never thought about that. That's it's such a good neat idea of going about it.
Well, you're gonna have these experiences soon, Rio. And I think in the fall we should do an episode on virtual gaming because after you've had a chance to try these platforms,
I will either love it or hate it. Yeah.
So we're in this kind of Instagram chat conversation group of Canadian like board game personalities, or I don't know what it is, but these people have said. This person regrets selling a copy of Wonderlands War, which is kind of like that Alice in Wonderland themed sort of area control game, because he was caught texting that person at a red light and got a $500 ticket.
That is an expensive game to be
selling.
That
is regret.
That is such a funny story. That's a good story, though, to tell.
Yeah, that's funny. This person says they don't regret selling Catan, but they sold it because he figured everyone else has a copy.
Yeah, so he'd still play it, but apparently ended up not having played it ever since.
One person regrets lending a game called Master Labyrinth to a friend because that person ended up losing it. There's an updated version, but it's clearly worse. And now he can't get a hold of this 1991 game. That's a long time ago.
1991. That's incredible that he had that game from 1991 to start with. That's awesome.
This one person regrets selling The Gallerist because they never loved it when they played it, but then they keep wondering whether one day they would love it.
That's kind of like my Root situation to some extent.
Oh man. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you so much for all the comments and all the engagement here. It's so great to hear from other people hear all the other stories of the selling experiences. I think it's very common for people to have some type of regrets selling certain games or
for sure.
not. And it's nice to hear from y'all.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's the cast for today. And thank you very much for listening. Thank you for all our listeners and people who interact with us on Instagram, where you can find us at 2Asians1Board. Mm-hmm. You can also email us at 2Asians1Board@gmail.com.
Yes.
And thank you for listening and following. And we will hopefully catch you soon. I guess the plan is, real that if you are with baby and too busy, I'll probably still cast myself. Maybe do a couple of shows. But I'm sure we can get you an hour of freeness
definitely.
To podcast.
I will be burping the baby as it'll be a fun episode. I think there will be some. Yeah, I will bring in the baby as a prompt almost to see what happens.
All right. So thank you for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Yeah, thank you.